Hello, welcome to another episode of Dev Radio. I'm David Giard, and I'm joined today by the co-founders of Vipeline out of New Jersey. Guys, how are you?
Very well, thank
good.
You.
Doing well. Thank you.
Do me a favor and introduce yourself. Chris first.
Chris Wall, I'm a co-founder and chief operating officer of Vipeline.
Alex?
I am Alex Hamilton, co-founder and CEO of Vipeline.
And Dave?
I'm Dave Barker, co-founder and chief product officer of Vipeline.
So we got the men here, the co-founders of this Vipeline, but we don't yet know, what is Vipeline?
Well, Vipeline is actually a very simple product description. What we do is we enable video to be recorded into any HTML framework from any device without requiring an app. And that is something that is really important to understand because we're all about removing barriers. What we're trying to do is create video community on publishers' websites, on products' websites, all across the web to make sure that people can communicate back and forth in the native environments that publishers and products want you to communicate in, not necessarily relying on social media.
Okay, you say video, I think of two separate things. One, I think of recorded video, like we're doing right now. We're recording it today on Wednesday, but nobody will see it until a week or so from now. Right. And then I think of real-time video, which we're also doing right now because you and I can hear each other right away. Are you doing
Absolutely.
Both or one of those or what?
Well, you know, we're doing actually recording videos. We're not doing Skype or it's back and forth conversation. But we're doing video where, you know, people leave a video and then someone can respond to that video. So it's more like, you know, imagine the classic text conversations that are taking place and replacing that with video. It's sort of more of really what Vipeline's about as far as establishing that community goes.
Okay. And then you talked about integrating it into HTML applications. These are websites, or is it more than that?
It could be websites, it could be banner ads, it could be apps that actually call up on HTML as well. So it's very versatile in how it can fit and work.
Give me an example of one of your customers and how they're using your service.
Okay, so we have a publisher in Germany, focus.de, which is currently using our software to allow people to record sports moments that happen, particularly soccer moments that happen. You know, they wanted to use it to promote a contest to show us your best goal. So it was all about getting, you know, kids to participate in what their soccer leagues were and what their soccer moment was and have them film the video right away and upload it directly into the focus.de experience where then that video would be on the website instantly. Very powerful software that doesn't really exist anywhere else.
Okay, so all that I need is some means of recording it and some connection to the internet. The customer of the customer. And
then
what about the customer? What about the website itself? How do they hook into your application?
Two lines of code. It's that simple. It's all API driven using Microsoft Azure. So it's very simple to actually deploy our code and our product into the experience.
Excellent. I'm excited. We're into the technology now. Somebody tell me about Azure. How are you guys using Azure?
Dave, you want to take that
one? Yeah, sure. So Azure is basically where our API ecosystem lives. Not only is that where we're serving up the API with the HTML and the JavaScript that's called to from those two lines of code, but also any of the content that is recorded and submitted through those digital footprints, those HTML frameworks, all of that content is submitted to the Azure ecosystem, but is also hosted and served up from Azure as well. That's also where the encoding is happening and being delivered back to that front-end user.
What pieces of Azure are you using? Are you using blob storage then to store the videos?
That's correct.
Are you using media services at all?
We are using portion of media services as well.
Cool. What else?
Well, as far as what we're using to help power it, we also had another flash-based system that we're actually sunsetting, just because we know where things are going with flash. But it is all web RTC-driven for the most part for capturing said video. You know, in the journey of building out this application, one of the biggest hurdles, as you can imagine, was that mobile component and not having to rely on a downloadable application. What we solved for with WebRTC is the ability to capture said video within any HTML framework, and that is served up from the Azure ecosystem as well.
Okay, yeah, I always hate to disrespect any piece of technology, but sunsetting might be a generous term for Flash. Yeah, so I'm not familiar with WebRTC. I'm not familiar with that. What is that?
a protocol to record video. It's a larger language for different formats with serving up HTML, but with WebRTC as it relates to video, it's really tapping into the HTML5 capabilities for capturing video. What we're doing with that.
This is a standard defined with an HTML5?
That's correct.
Okay, I should learn it then. I saw you're using, I'm looking at an article here on TechNet about Vipeline, and it says you're using SendGrid also for something.
SendGrid we're using from a marketing perspective. We are capturing any form data for inbound leads and email campaigns that we're hitting or targeting, I should say, qualified suspects. We're using SendGrid for mass deployment of those communications.
And SendGrid is actually part of an Azure Marketplace. So I mean, somebody else is actually providing that service and then making it available through Azure. Mm-hmm. How's that working out? Does that integrate really well?
Yes, very seamlessly. I haven't had any issues with SendGrid. So,
excellent. How about the scalability? Are you tapping into the scalability features of Azure?
Yes, we are. I mean, we had to, for that publisher that Alex mentioned earlier, we had to do some heavy load testing for how many modules can be loaded up simultaneously. Alex, you can speak to some of the quantitative elements of that test.
Yeah, I mean, first I'll tell you, one of the reasons we went with Azure is because our CTO, Peter Lapka, was really heavily into the Microsoft Azure platform, and he sold us on the scalability of it. And we understood how important that would be from the get because we know where this could go. So as Dave said, as we started to expand our offering and we started to get to with clients who were saying, you know, we're going to have 10 million or 20 million impression in deployment in a month, we needed to make sure that technology could scale. So what we had to do most recently was actually all out test that. So we actually tested the capability using the Azure platform to simulate a 200 million impression campaign in 1 month. So peak hours, that was about 750,000 user call-ups in an hour is what that comes out to. So we were very happy to report that we got zero fails. So that was actually a very, very big deal for us as far as making sure that Azure could handle what we needed and that our software was actually capable of handling what we needed as well.
That's really impressive. We're using the tools inside of Azure, I guess their tools are in VSTS. Visual Studio Team System that'll assist you with that. We're using those, or did you roll your own?
Using. I think that's what they were using, Dave. But I'm not sure. But I think, yeah, yes. They were definitely listening. They were definitely spot checking and doing everything. And it took about, you know, maybe 3 or 4 tests to get it where it was. It wasn't like it worked right away out of the box. You know, we knew there were some tweaks we had to make, but utilizing the Azure system, we were able to go back in and really check to find out where the bottlenecks were, how to open things up, and make everything run at optimum capability.
Oh, absolutely. That's the purpose of testing, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little about how you got started. Where did this idea come from?
I think that's Chris's role.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I started my career at CBS News as a video editor and worked my way up through the ranks. And at a time when web video was just sort of budding, I got involved with MarketWatch.com and their partnership with CBS. And and that really is how I got into this focus, in particular streaming and recording. Throughout my time in the news industry, you know, there's some pain points that I think that we saw that we knew we could, you know, take care of on our own as far as a unique entrepreneurial idea. And, you know, we were in an environment where we were sort of in a print-centric culture. We wound up at the Wall Street Journal, you know, working with their video platform. And one of the things we noticed, you know, out of the gate was how long it took to publish some things. And in the news business, you know, immediacy is a big deal.
Sure.
So we wanted to build, you know, a publishing system and a CMS that could do real-time publishing and real-time moderation of content coming in. When we started looking at UGC with people like Brightcove in the early days, one of the biggest problems with trying to pursue that was editorial concerns, brand safety, things like that. So we wanted to build a moderation tool that would assist with that output. As well, at the time, the resources we were thinking it would take to moderate such a, you know, huge volume of content was just going to be, you know, the human resources were going to be unsurmountable. So that's what took UGC sort of out of the news ranks. And we wanted to solve for both those problems with pipelines. So we made a moderation tool where you can monitor enormous amounts of content in a very short period of time with some of the tools that we've built in, sort of reducing the concerns on those resources. And the immediacy with which we can make it publish out is just, I think, second to none.
And that's interesting that the news media figured this out a long time ago for television. There's a video on my TV news of what happened just a few minutes ago. Or if I'm watching a football game at halftime, I have the highlights of everything that happened, even up to the minute. But it took a while for that to move to the internet.
Right. Yeah, I think one of the instances where we really got, Dave wound up joining me at the Wall Street Journal as a creative director, and we were working together on the video platform. And when big news events would happen, like, for instance, Arab Spring, there were so many iPhones and Samsung phones on the ground where all the action was happening. And there were all these various broadcast-type tools that would try to bring it back live, and there would either be a lot of latency or a really poor picture quality. And we thought there's got to be a way to tap into all these phones and get great quality video, even if it's in small chunks, to publish instantly. And so that's something else I think that we've solved for is, Alex was talking about removing barriers. Well, this is a red record button on a landing page for a reporter. And, within minutes, they have that video in its full quality back to the bureau to publish out to the web, in real time.
Right. And I think part of that, Chris, just to tack on to that, is we also early on quickly dismissed any concept that relied on a sort of destination platform or destination site, because we are seeing a lot of that, and we saw a lot of at the time that it was breaking the experience for the user of saying, okay, I'm here, but if I have to give this or record this or do something, I have to go somewhere else. So we kind of turned it on its head by saying, how can we make this so lightweight so that it can basically travel anywhere? And by anywhere, as Alex was mentioning earlier, any HTML framework, be it a web page, be it within a display banner ad or a native advertisement, be it even within a downloadable third-party app that can render HTML. We basically, rather than send the user to that destination to engage in that experience, we brought that experience to them within to any native experience that they were already partaking in. That was kind of how we flipped it around.
Right. Which all goes back to the same thing we talked about. The two biggest things Viplend does is make it as easy as possible for the users and make it as easy as possible for the clients to actually deploy that video. Our process is so streamlined that those instances take place immediately.
Yeah, I like that.
One of the things that we noticed when towards the end of our time at the Wall Street Journal was the amount of resource going into managing social media for marketing purposes and also publishing video out directly. And over time, the sort of diminishing returns that came from that. Right now the New York Times is publishing, I think, directly to Facebook. And so there's a little bit of loss of editorial control. There's a less unique traffic, ad revenues declining. What we wanted to do is create a way to utilize those, social entities as marketing tools, but have them drive the traffic back to the native site, which is sort of, the promise that wasn't upheld. I mean, basically now people are consuming their news on social media, and there's not enough community being built on these native sites, particularly with the publishers and the brands. And so when we built our sharing mechanism, in Facebook in particular, there's a JPEG with a duration and, that suggests it's a video. When you click on it, it drives you back to the original site where it was recorded, automatically scrolls to the place where the module was on the page, and then autoplays that recording. So it's really closing the loop and utilizing social media as the marketing tool that it was meant to be, but keeping the traffic local.
Right. And that's such an important thing, because that's the greatest lie that social media tells, is they're going to actually increase your awareness and they're going to increase your footprint and traffic. And what they're doing is they've created, walled communities themselves. So once they get you in there, they don't want you out of there. They don't want you to leave their space when all the actual content creators, the publishers, the brands, the people who are actually creating content are losing the traffic to, you know, third-party social media. It's very bizarre. There would be no business model that would operate like that under any other pretenses, but for some reason, this has been accepted. We're trying to level the playing field a bit, as Chris said.
Interesting. And then lower the friction as well, which you've said a couple of times. That's that's nice.
Absolutely.
Did you get any help from Microsoft as you're building your company?
We spoke to definitely a bunch of people. We had a meeting actually on 42nd Street with an engineering team. And that was if we were going to go the enterprise route, we were going to have, you know, sort of connections within that realm. But we basically got, like we said, kind of, you know, inducted into the Spark Plus program so fast that I think we were shocked. And I think the enterprise of Microsoft was very shocked that we got put into the BizSpark Plus program immediately. So it was just sort of like we had all of this attention, and then we kind of got put into this autopilot program. You know, and again, we think it's a great honor. You know, one of the things that Microsoft did say to us was, you know, we tried to build this same thing 3 years ago, and you guys have done a much better job than we have. So that was actually a huge confidence builder to all of us.
There are some smart people in this company.
There are some very smart people in this company. So obviously when, you know, when Dave hears that, the product that he designed was better than what Microsoft designed, that's a huge, huge vote of confidence to what we're doing and what we're trying to accomplish. So I think that's yeah, in the beginning, like I said, we had a lot of attention, but we kind of got put into this, I think, because we're fast-tracked. And now I think we'd actually like a little bit more contact, a little bit more attention from within, so we can actually get some notoriety out about what Pipeline's doing, what we're trying to accomplish.
Well, I definitely want to. I can definitely help with that. I mean, this is this show is a good start for that. And if you guys are successful, we're successful. We can tell a good story about a company that's built on Azure that's doing really well. Then that's good for all of us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
What was the biggest challenge you had starting this company? Technology? Was it business related?
I'll just, you know, put a little nugget there around starting with the technology. We know what we wanted to do. We, from a user experience perspective, we knew that there was an opportunity there, and pain points that weren't being solved for, as Chris was mentioning earlier. So from the technology perspective, we had a proof of concept that we got off the ground and started to validate in the marketplace. So we knew there was a demand. But I think when it came to the mobile side of things, we wanted to make sure that the client and the users weren't dependent on some sort of walled garden third-party application to execute with this. So it took a little while to solve for being able to record, as Chris mentioned earlier, just hitting a red record button within any digital footprint and have that capture the video. So that was one of the biggest challenges out of the gate. And then, of course, brand awareness, right? You know, this is a type of product where you are reliant on adoption. Many disruptive technologies are, right? You've got that early adoption bell curve that we're all familiar with, and it can be pretty steep sometimes. So getting that word out to both the users as well as the brands who would be deploying, the clients that would be deploying the technology, I think, was an initial challenge. But I think 2015, we really saw a massive go-to-market strategy that really got us in front of the right set of eyeballs across the globe. So it's been an exciting time.
And there's been a pretty big learning curve for us on the business side as well. I mean, we're all first-time entrepreneurs, and we've tried to read all the best books about this process, but I think there's no other way but to learn most things the hard way, and we feel sort of accomplished in the sense that we've done some things naturally the right way, and the things that we've done the wrong way we've been able to learn from very quickly. But there's a lot of pitfalls in this process, and particularly when it comes to raising cash, and we're learning very quickly, and I think we're going to be doing pretty well.
Absolutely.
Anything else you want to say about your company that I haven't asked you about?
I was actually just going to throw out there to dovetail off what Dave said, which was, you know, the early adopters. You know, one of the reasons we went to Europe was because Europe tends to look at things a little bit differently than the States. Europe will look at things and say, what can we try? And the States will tend to say, what's working? So they're a little bit later to adopt. So we understood that in order to get our product where it needed to be, to put it in front of people, was to actually be in a situation where we could show live deployments. So we actually went to Europe. We have another company that just signed on with us out of Ireland. And we've got a couple of, you know, placeholders here in the US, and we're waiting for these things to come to fruition. And then we'll go back to those leads that Dave was discussing. We'll go back to, you know, people that we know have interest and want to see traction. Because we think the bottom line is, if you can show engagement rates and you can show ROI, that stuff goes out the window. Then all of a sudden everybody's using your product, because that's really what it's all about.
I didn't realize. So in Europe, European companies, you're saying, generally speaking, are more willing to take risks.
Yeah.
Try things that haven't been tried before.
That's one thing we've learned. Yes.
Yes. Yes. As to where the publishing companies in particular here are a little bit more dug in, because they still have revenues coming in. Granted, they are depreciating, but they're not reacting as quick as they probably should to what the current curve is and what they need to do to really make themselves a full-on digital entity and not be reliant on, you know, third-party social media.
Where can we find out more about your company?
At Vipeline.com. That's V as in Victor, I-P-E-L-I-N-E.com. We have a blog section there as well that has a slew of informative videos on front-end implementation, the user experience, back-end moderation. So there's a lot of information in there.
Chris, Alex, Dave, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you guys so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
Best of luck in the future. And thank you for watching Dev Radio.